Today's conversation starters, Brian and Leland, mornings on News Talk 102.3 KXYL, AM 1240, BrownwoodRadio.com.
Hey, Paula, I want to marry you. Hey, hey, Paula, no one else could ever do.
Right, it's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock, 8:10 here on News Talk 102.3 and AM 1240. David Jenkins joins us on the program this morning. We talked about this, in the recent past, the EPA with some new regulations over the water on your property. And, boy, having all the rain that we had yesterday, this is a perfect time. They would, in essence, control the puddles and the stock tanks on area ranches and farms. It used to be just navigable waters. But now, according to this, David, am I getting close to being accurate on that?
Not exactly. The rule that came out a few weeks back is basically clarifying the scope of the Clean Water Act and whether what it does with respect to wetlands and smaller streams. And there's a lot of specific exclusions in there for things like mud puddles and ditches and so forth that it doesn't cover. It actually is less protective than the way EPA was interpreting the Clean Water Act for 30 years after the act was established. It does protect wetlands and small streams and stuff that are within the historic floodplain and that are within a certain distance of the floodplain.
Okay, so basically, okay, let me try to recap this then, and you tell me where or if I'm missing it. For 30 years, we had the Clean Water Act. This new act is a reinterpretation of the Clean Water Act, which actually lessens the restrictions, but it does include more bodies of water, if you will.
Well, there was a Supreme Court case in 2006 that was sort of muddled. It basically, four justices went one way, four justices went another way, and one justice went neither way. There was no clear guidance from the courts as to how broad to interpret the Clean Water Act. And so what that left up to EPA was to craft some guidance so everybody would understand what the parameters of the Clean Water Act are. And, if you look back at the history of the Clean Water Act and you listen to Republicans like Senator Howard Baker, President Reagan's former chief of staff, you'll see that they intended for the Clean Water Act to cover wetlands and small intermittent streams and smaller bodies of water because they understood that it's all connected. And so if the Clean Water Act doesn't cover those particular resources, then they can't really protect the bigger resources. So it's clear that it needs to be a fairly broad-scoping law. And so EPA is clarifying that and writing in a bunch of exclusions for agriculture and things like that.
So area ranchers with stock tanks, as we call them around here, on their property, they're not going to be affected by this?
If they don't have a clear nexus to a water body, in other words, when it rains, they don't flow into an existing covered body of water within a certain distance, then no, they wouldn't be covered. The thing that we're concerned about is that people, sometimes look at this as, EPA's concerned about these things that people are doing on property they own. Our concern is that if you don't have something like this, we lose more and more wetlands. I mean, we've already lost 50% of the wetlands that this country had when it was founded. And what happens when we lose wetlands? Wetlands perform these services. They hold water, and as you've had a lot of flooding in Texas, you understand the importance of this. They hold and absorb water, and then they slowly release the water over time. So not only do they protect against flooding and fast runoff, they protect against drought, impacts of drought, too, because releasing that water slowly over time, then when you get in the heat and dry spell in the middle of summer, you have more in-stream flow for irrigation and other things. And if, you let every Tom, Dick, and Harry, pave over wetlands and build a strip mall or something, all that water just runs off fast, floods your property, and then there's nothing left when you've got the dry times. So it impacts all of us. And when you don't have those services from the wetlands, what do? We build infrastructure. We build dams, we build levees, we build improvements to our stormwater sewers and our sewer treatment plants to handle all that fast runoff. And what does that do? It costs taxpayers money. You and I pay for it. And not only do we pay for it, it has to be maintained in perpetuity. So our children and our grandchildren pay for it. So for a fiscal conservative, our question is, why would you want to replace something that happened for free, that you know, has been provided to us, with something that we have to build, maintain over time, and that costs taxpayers a whole bunch of money?
Location, location, location. A lot of times I'm really surprised that we build things in known floodplain areas, and then we're shocked when people have to be evacuated and either homes or businesses are run. And I'm thinking, well, you kind of knew that was a problem area before you started developing it.
Sometimes they did.
You do what?
Go ahead. No, so sometimes they know that.
Back and go again.
I'm sorry.
You're saying that.
Sometimes they know that. Then other times that, you know, because there's been development upstream of wetlands and areas that used to not flood, they do flood. And so, but yes, there is a problem of people always rebuilding in floodplains. But our floods that used to come every 100 years, a lot of them are now coming every 10 years.
Well, let me ask you this. I've got a small piece of property that's got a named river that runs through the front of it. Nothing huge, but with all the rain we've had, it's running and flowing. Do these new standards put any restrictions on what I can and cannot do with that water?
No, it probably will not change versus what the law has been interpreted at since the early 1970s.
Okay.
You still, you know, the issue mostly with this new rule is the waters that were a little bit fuzzy as to whether they were covered or not. And it sounds like what you have is something that's always been covered and probably always will be.
Yeah. Now, is this already in place, these new standards?
They're taking 90-day comment period, and then okay. they would consider those comments and then finalize it. And I'll just add one thing, is that the other thing to think about is property rights. If you have someone upstream that paves over wetlands and causes this fast runoff, and you know, the people that bear the brunt of that are the property owners that live downstream. And President Reagan recognized something he called the destructive trespass of pollution. And what that means is something someone else does upstream or upwind of you actually ends up being a trespass on your property because it floods you out or gives you less water to irrigate crops or whatever. So when we look at this, we just need to look at the whole picture and not just focus on the fact that, you know, yes, there's a federal agency that has to oversee this, but, you know, absent that, what are the other options?
Gotcha. And where do listeners get a copy so they can read for themselves what these new standards are proposed to be? And then, two, where do they make a public comment on it?
Yeah, they can go to the EPA's website, and there'll be plenty of advertising of the rule and where to go to comment on it. That's the Clean Water Act rule. And go there, and you can read the whole thing for yourself. You don't have to listen to what some pundit says it does or whatever. Just read it for yourself. It's not that long. And then if you want to find out more about our perspective on how this protects our budget and how it protects people's property rights from a conservative perspective, you can go to conservativestewards.org.
All right, perfect. Well, listen, man, we appreciate the clarification on some of this. David, thanks.
Well, thank you.
All right, have a great day. We'll see you.
You too.
It's 18 minutes past